So as I gave a forecast this morning, we will be talking a bit about Mother's Day this evening. When you look at the Bible, there are various women of faith that are just exemplars of faith. Yet, when you look at the detailed life of each of them has weaknesses, each has failures, each has problems they have to overcome. And what I would like to do this evening is look at one such woman who is actually in the genealogy of Jesus, and that is Bathsheba. Bathsheba is a name that almost has a connotation to it equal to Jezebel. Whenever you say the name Jezebel, it of course brings sentiments of negativity and perhaps lustfulness and sinfulness. And likewise with the name Bathsheba, she has been marked by one event in her life that I think at times we forget other things that she did in her life beyond, of course, her interaction with David. And so I'd like to look at the life of Bathsheba, see both her strengths and her weaknesses, and really look to see how does she exemplify biblical traits of motherhood. So as we begin in 2 Samuel chapter 11, this is the story where we're introduced to Bathsheba, beginning in verse 1, 2 Samuel 11, verse 1. In the spring of the year, the time when the kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel. And they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained at Jerusalem. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch and was walking on the roof on the king's house that he saw the roof of a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful. And David sent and inquired about the woman, and one said, "Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" So David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her. Now she'd been purifying herself from her uncleanness. Then she returned to her house, and the woman conceived, and she sent and told David, "I am pregnant." And we know what happens in the story from here. David bears a child through Bathsheba, and then because of this, Nathan the prophet will rebuke David for his sin. Now, let's go through this story from Bathsheba's perspective a little bit. As you pick up in the narrative, picking up really in verse 6, Bathsheba is not mentioned again until you get down to verse 26. The focus of the narrative here is not on Bathsheba, but on David. So after this point, David recognizes he has a problem. If Bathsheba becomes pregnant, then all of Israel will know it's not by Uriah's hand because Uriah is at war. So David then sends for Uriah and then tries to have Uriah conceive with Bathsheba, thinking then that that will minimize the effects of the sin. However, Uriah is such a noble man that he will not even think of having these type of relations with his wife while this nation of Israel is at war. So because of this, David's problem isn't fixed at all. Rather, David resorts to killing Uriah. And then thinking that will then solve the problem, he then takes Bathsheba. Look at verse 26. When the wife of Uriah, that is Bathsheba, heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she lamented over her husband. And when the mourning was over, David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. So before we leave 2 Samuel chapter 11, was Bathsheba a seductress? Or was she a victim? Which was she? You know, from the one perspective, Bathsheba is conceived of as the seductress. Much like Jezebel, who took in Ahab by her lust and her passions, she is seen as the seductress who very connivingly went to the rooftop knowing that David would see her so that then she can seduce the king and then have a child with the king and then perhaps make her way up through the royal lineage. Was that what Bathsheba was thinking? Or was she a victim of the Me Too movement? Was David really a sexual predator of the first century BC who finds this innocent woman just bathing, and then he has the gall and the audacity to send for her, and then he conceives by her? Which was she? Well, there is some guesswork in whichever conclusion we'll draw. I'll tell you my personal conclusion on this, and you can disagree and we can talk about it later. But I do want us to look at the narrative in this perspective. 2 Samuel chapter 11 is not written with culpability, that is, guiltiness, on Bathsheba. Rather, the blame goes almost entirely to David in this story. You'll notice the very last part of the verse 27. The thing that David had done displeased the Lord. Again, the focus here is on David. Look at Psalm 51 with me. Go to Psalm 51. This is the psalm that David wrote after Nathan the prophet confronts him. We're going to read just a few verses from Psalm 51. The all caps right before it, a psalm, that was a part of the original psalm. So let's begin. The all caps there. To the choir master, a psalm of David. When Nathan the prophet went to him after he had gone in to Bathsheba. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love. According to your abundant mercy. Blot out your transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions and my sin is ever before you. Against you, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you may be justified in your words and blameless in your judgment. Do you notice there the first person singular perspective? I. David here is taking personal responsibility for his sin with Bathsheba. Also, back in 2 Samuel chapter 11, Yahweh the Lord held David responsible for the sin. Here's my personal conclusion about 2 Samuel chapter 11. If you look back up to 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1, in the spring of the year, the time when the kings go to battle, perhaps Bathsheba thought that David was actually in battle and not in the castle. It would have, of course, made much more sense for David to have been with his men on the battlefield than for him to actually been at his home. And so as I read through 2 Samuel chapter 11, it really seems that Bathsheba was not a seductress trying to go after David and just connivingly putting herself on the roof at a certain time of the day so that then the king may possibly see her, so that then the king may possibly call to her, so that then she may possibly bear a child, so that she may possibly make her way up into the royal household. That doesn't seem to make logical sense if that was her motivation. Rather, what seems to be the case is Bathsheba is caught in this act. David calls to her, and then at that point, that's when she should have been like Joseph with Potiphar's wife and said, no, even though you are the king, I will not betray my husband like this. I will not play the adulteress, but I will be faithful to him. So don't misunderstand. Both David and Bathsheba are guilty for the sin in 2 Samuel chapter 11. But as you go through the book of 2 Samuel, the guilt is always placed upon the head of David, and it's never placed upon, from the writer's perspective, it's never explicitly placed upon Bathsheba's head. So as you begin here in 2 Samuel chapter 11 with the story of Bathsheba, here you find a tragic story. You find a woman whose husband is killed at the hands of her second husband, and a woman who is now conceived of a child of the king, that is going to be by its nature an illegitimate child, that is going to perhaps rival the other of David's children for the throne, and then you have poor Bathsheba. That's not how the story ends with Bathsheba. You go over one chapter, look at chapter 12. As you begin in verse 15, Nathan the prophet has just proclaimed to David, your child will die because of your sin. So Nathan went to his house, verse 15 of chapter 12. And the Lord afflicted the child that Uriah's wife bore to David, and he became sick. David therefore sought God on behalf of the child. And David fasted and went and lay all night on the ground. And the elders of the house stood beside him to raise him from the ground, but he would not, nor did he eat food with them. On the seventh day, the child died. So the child who is the product of David and Bathsheba's sin, is going to die. So think where you have this woman now. Her husband's dead. Her child's dead. She has David with whom she commits sexual sin and has to feel remorse because of that. She's left her family and is now with David. Poor Bathsheba, right? Go down a bit later. Look at verse 24. Then David comforted his wife Bathsheba and went into her and lay with her. And she bore a son and called his name Solomon. And the Lord loved him and sent a message by Nathan the prophet. So he called his name Jedidiah because of the Lord. So I would argue, while this is the end of Bathsheba's story in 2 Samuel, this is really just the beginning of her story. Everything that's happened in her life so far has been absolute tragedy. But now she's going to have redemption. The woman whose husband has died, whose first child has died, is now going to become mother to the future, and in many ways one of the greatest kings of Israel. She's going to become mother of Solomon. Well, as you go throughout the rest of 2 Samuel, you don't see Bathsheba again. There's a question about where is she? David, of course, had various wives. You know, Abigail's another one. Where's Abigail in all this? But as you read through the story, the focus of the narrative, really from 2 Samuel 12 on, is about the parent-child conflict between David and his children. Absalom is going to become an absolute pest to David. Joab, his commander, is going to become a pain in the neck. Abiathar is going to cause him trouble. David's going to have issue after issue after issue, all coming from his sin that he committed with Bathsheba. But this is not the only story about Bathsheba we have. If you go to the book of 1 Kings with me, we're going to pick up with the narrative of Bathsheba. Go to 1 Kings chapter 1. So throughout the rest of David's life, there's not much that's said about Bathsheba. I think we're going to draw from some inferences about what she was doing during this time. But it's not explicitly told in the narrative where she was, what she was doing, who she was with, etc. It's not till the end of David's life that she's going to resurface. Look at 1 Kings chapter 1. We're going to begin in verse 1. 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 1. Now King David was old and advanced in years. And although they had covered him with clothes, he could not get warm. Therefore his servants said to him, "Let a young woman be sought for my lord the king, and let her wait on the king and be of his service. Let her lie in your arms so that my lord the king may be warm." So they sought for a beautiful young woman throughout all the territory of Israel and found Abishag the Shunammite and brought her to the king. The young woman was very beautiful, and she was of service to the king and attended to him, but the king knew her not. So here, David's an old man, and he's the type that would love the auditorium to be 80 degrees by this point. Some of you can relate. David is just cold. And because of this, then, he's going to have a female servant come to him and keep him warm. Now, notice her name, Abishag. She's going to become really important in a moment. One other detail about this before we move on. You notice the last phrase there, "the king knew her not." Here the king has a beautiful young woman brought to him, but the king knew her not. Why? David's learned his lesson. I think that's the implication of the text. David, by this point, has had children die. He's had children try to kill him. He's been exiled from the land. He's made his way back, but didn't come with the same glory previously. He has just faced consequence after consequence for his sin. I think what it's showing us here is David's really learned, I can't do this again. And so the interaction with Abishag is very different from his interaction with Bathsheba. But let's continue. Verse 5. Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, "I will be king." And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. His father had never at any time displeased him by asking, "Why have you done thus and so?" He was also a very handsome man. And he was born next after Absalom. He conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and with Abiathar the priest, and they followed Adonijah and helped him. But Zadok the priest, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and Nathan the prophet, and Shimei, and Rei, and David's mighty men were not with Adonijah. Adonijah sacrificed sheep, oxen, fattened cattle by the serpent stone, which is beside En Rogel, and invited his brothers, the king's son, and all the royal officials of Judah. But he did not invite Nathan the prophet, or Benaiah, or the mighty men, or Solomon his brother. David's an old man who is in his bed being comforted. While this is going on, his son Adonijah is going to seek the throne for himself. Now, if you'll remember with me, Nathan the prophet has made it abundantly clear by the very mouth of God that Solomon is to be the king. Solomon is to be the chosen seed of David who will fulfill the promise of 2 Samuel chapter 7 and build a temple for God, sit upon the throne of David, and be the seed of David, the seed of Abraham that is reigning. But Adonijah's getting power hungry. Daddy's old and cold and he doesn't know what's going on. So I'm going to get the throne for myself and overthrow Solomon. Here's a major problem. A major problem. Not just to the geopolitical situation of Israel, but also to the religious lineage of Israel. Because it is supposed to be through Solomon then that the Messiah is going to come. This is an existential crisis for the nation of Israel. What then is going to happen? Verse 11. Nathan said to Bathsheba, the son of Solomon, "Have you not heard that Adonijah, the son of Haggith, has become king, and David our Lord does not know it? Now therefore come, let me give you advice that you may save her own life and the life of your son Solomon." Just stop there with me. Here there is Adonijah seeking to overthrow the throne. Nathan the prophet, who has been the admonisher and the main prophet working with David throughout his kingship, has a choice to make. He knows that Solomon is the once and future king, and he is the one who is going to sit on David's throne, but how is he going to get Solomon to be the official king and for David to nip this problem of Adonijah in the bud? Look back a little bit earlier with me to verse 9. Adonijah sacrificed sheep, but verse 10, he didn't invite Nathan or Benaiah or the mighty men. Look at verse 8. Zadok the priest, Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, Nathan the prophet, Shimei, Rei, and David's mighty men were not with Adonijah. When Nathan needed help, he could have gone to any of the mighty men of Israel. If you go to the end of 2 Samuel, chapter 22 through 24, somewhere through there, I think it's 23, where it recounts all the mighty acts of David's mighty men. These are men of men. These are men who are going to take animals and kill them by their bare hands. These are men who go to war and are going to have victim after victim following their king. Brave, courageous, strong, mighty men. Nathan could have gone to the mighty men. He could have gone to Zadok. He could have gone to any of the chief warriors. But who does he turn to? He goes to a woman. He goes to Bathsheba. Why does he go to Bathsheba? Because if you go down, look at verse 12. "Therefore come," says Nathan, "let me give you advice that you may save your own life and the life of your son Solomon." Whose career, whose throne is at stake? Solomon's. So who then is Nathan going to go to get him help? He's going to go to his mommy. Don't you just love that story? Here, Nathan again, he could have gone to the chief of warriors to find help for Solomon. But he goes to his mommy to find him help. What then is Bathsheba going to do? Continue with the narrative with me. Look down in verse 13. "While you are still speaking with the king, I will come in after you and confirm your words." So Nathan says this, "Go to David, tell him what's going on. I will then come behind you and confirm what you've just said. So let's pick up. Let's see what Bathsheba does. Verse 15. Bathsheba went to the king in his chamber. Now the king was very old, and Abishag the Shunammite was attending to the king. Bathsheba bowed and paid homage to the king. And the king said, "What do you desire?" She said to him, "My lord, you swore to your servant by the Lord your God, saying, 'Solomon your son shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne.' But now behold, Adonijah is king, and although you, my lord, the king, do not know it, he has sacrificed oxen, fattened cattle, sheep in abundance, and invited all the sons of the king, Abiathar the priest, Joab the commander of the army. But Solomon your servant he is not invited. And now, my lord the king, the eyes of all Israel are on you, to tell them who shall sit on the throne of my lord the king after him. Otherwise it will come to pass, when my lord the king sleeps with his fathers, that I and my son Solomon will be counted offenders." Verses right after this, Nathan goes in and says the same thing. Go down to verse 28. "King David answered, 'Call Bathsheba to me.' So she came into the king's presence and stood before the king. And the king swore, saying, 'As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my soul out of every adversity, as I swore to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, saying, Solomon your son shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne in my place, even so I will do this day.' Then Bathsheba bowed with her face to the ground and paid homage to the king and said, 'May my Lord King David live forever.'" The throne of David is going to be saved by Solomon's mommy. Don't you just love that story? Here, anyone in Israel, Nathan could have called upon to beseech to go before the king. It is going to be the woman who started all the problems with David in the first place that is going to be the one to save his throne right before his death. Well, that's not all that Bathsheba does. She's very, very cunning. As you go over to chapter 2, David dies. Look at verse 12. "So Solomon sat on the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was firmly established." Adonijah's not done. Look at verse 13. "Adonijah the son of Haggith came to Bathsheba the son of Solomon, and she said, 'Do you come peacefully?' He said, 'Peacefully.'" Let me stop here for a second. By this point, David has squelched out Adonijah's overthrow. His rebellion's done by this point. Solomon is safely on the throne, but Adonijah's going to have a final request. He doesn't go to Solomon. He doesn't go to Nathan. He doesn't go to Abiathar. He doesn't go to anyone else. He goes to Bathsheba. Continue on, verse 14, 2:14. "Then he said, 'I have something to say to you.' She said, 'Speak.' And he said, 'You know that the kingdom was mine and that all Israel fully expected me to reign. However, the kingdom has turned about and become my brother's, for it was from the Lord. And now I have one request to make of you. Do not refuse me.' She said to him, 'Speak.' He said, 'Please ask King Solomon, he will not refuse you, to give me Abishag the Shunammite as my wife.' Bathsheba said, 'Very well, I will speak for you to the king.'" Adonijah has one request: give me Abishag. Now, why did he want Abishag? Two theories. The first is she was just very beautiful. He was a handsome young man. He wanted her for personal reasons. You understand what I mean. The second one, I think, is much more likely. Abishag would have had clout with her by this point. David's dead. Adonijah is going to make one final attempt at a coup, and he's going to get Abishag, the beautiful young woman who comforted David in his final days, to be beside his throne so that as he seeks to overthrow the kingdom and as he seeks to get the throne once forever again, that then he will have Abishag by him. So notice what Bathsheba does. Verse 19, Bathsheba went to King Solomon to speak to him on behalf of Adonijah. And the king rose to meet her and bowed down to her. Then he sat on his throne and had a seat brought for the king's mother, and she sat on his right. Just stop there. Bathsheba goes to Solomon. The king rose to meet her and bowed down to her. Whenever Bathsheba went to David, she bowed down to him. When she goes to Solomon, he bows down to her. Do you see the respect he has for her? He sat on the throne and had a seat brought for the king's mother, and she sat on his right. I mean, David didn't have anything like this. Here Bathsheba is going to sit beside the king, the one who had lost her child decades before, the one who had lost her husband at the hands of the king decades before, is now sitting on a throne in Israel. She is a clever, clever, cunning woman. I mean, no, I don't take her to be as vengeful as we've often seen her, perhaps, but she's cunning. Continuing on, verse 20. She said, I have one small request to make of you. Do not refuse me. The king said to her, make your request, my mother, for I will not refuse her. He knows better. She said, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah your brother as his wife. King Solomon answered, and why do you ask? Abishag, the Shunammite for Adonijah. Ask for his kingdom also, for he is my older brother. And on his side are Abiathar the priest and Joab the son of Zeruiah. Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, God do so to me and also more if the word does not cost Adonijah his life. Now therefore, as the Lord lives, who has established me and placed me on the throne of David my father, and who has made me a house as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death also. So King Solomon sent Benaiah the son of Jehoiada and struck him down, and he died. Solomon is going to take Adonijah, and as he continue on throughout the rest of the story, he's going to kill Adonijah and go down to the very, very end of the chapter, verse 46. The king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and struck him down also, and he died. The coup's over. Adonijah and all of his colleagues and comrades are done for. So the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. The beginning of Solomon's reign is very, very different from the beginning of Saul's reign or the beginning of David's reign. Remember, when David was first anointed king, he was on the run for years before he's ever really sets up his mount as king. Likewise with Saul, Saul had issue after issue to occur. But Solomon is going to establish the strongest of thrones in the history of Israel. And during his kingship, they are going to have greater peace and prosperity than they did during the time of David. David was a man of war who was seeking to establish the might of the kingdom. Solomon is the son who continues the political and religious direction of Israel throughout the first part of his life, at least. And then because of that, Israel is going to enjoy peace and prosperity. But do you notice what's interesting behind this? Perhaps next to David, the greatest king in the history of Israel. Yes, I know Hezekiah and goes up there as well. But you take Solomon. Why was he such a great king? Why did he become the wisest of men to walk the earth save Jesus himself? Because of his mother. Why is Bathsheba then not mentioned in the entirety of the rest of 2 Samuel 13 following? Because she was with her son. The focus of the narrative from 2 Samuel 13 on is on political battles and wars and fightings and just great geopolitical aspects and fights that are going on within Israel. That's not what Bathsheba was doing. Bathsheba was feeding her son. She was teaching him to eat. She was teaching him to walk, teaching him to speak, teaching him to read, teaching him language, teaching him what it meant to be a king, teaching him what it meant to be a leader. She was guiding and prodding and molding her son to be king. And that's the value of Bathsheba. To me, it is such a pity the woman who is only remembered for her sin with David did so much more that's never recorded but is certainly induced within Scripture. She raised a boy to be king. And if that is not the greatest of call for mothers, I don't know what is. To take boys and to raise them to be men. To take girls and to raise them to be women. To be said so devoted to your children that even the prophet knows you'll do anything for your child. You'll even give your life for him if necessary to establish his throne. That's the type of mother that Bathsheba was. A couple other verses I do want to point out before we close. Go with me to Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1. Although she's not by name, Bathsheba is mentioned in the lineage of Christ. Matthew chapter 1. Look at verse 6. David was the father of Solomon by the wife of Uriah. Who's the wife of Uriah? Bathsheba. Bathsheba then is in the lineage of Christ. Why? Well, this is a whole nother sermon. But again, to understand the Old Testament fully, you have to see it through the lens of Christ. Who is Bathsheba foreshadowing? Mary. Right. I mean, here you have a woman who has a child under questionable circumstances who is then going to raise her young boy to be king. It's Mary. Bathsheba is a foreshadow of Mary. And what you see then in the lineage of Christ is a foreshadow even in the life of Bathsheba of a woman who is so devoted to her son that she will even be with him to the point of death, and she will do anything that she can to establish her throne, his throne, because she's committed to her children. One more verse before we close. Go with me to Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. I thought about framing the sermon this evening from that perspective. But we'll do that another time. I was just so enthralled by all the narrative with Bathsheba. I know we spent a lot of time reading tonight, but it's been very good. I wanted us just to read the narrative of Bathsheba and see how amazing of a mother she was. Again, Solomon writes this. Look at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. My son, hear your father's instructions and forsake not your mother's teaching. As you go through Proverbs 1 through 9, it's not just the father's teaching that's mentioned. It's the mother's teaching, the mother's instruction. Why is that so important to Solomon? Because he learned it from his mother. He learned it from a mother who perhaps he didn't even realize the full extent of which had given her life for the reign of her son, who had molded and shaped and raised and shepherded and trained him. That's the woman of Bathsheba. There's actually some rabbinic tradition that tells us Bathsheba wrote Proverbs 31. Now, some of that speculation, we're not 100% certain, but many rabbis take Proverbs 31 written by Bathsheba. Because, hear my son, your father's instructions, and forsake not your mother's teaching. So before we close, let's just reflect quickly on Bathsheba. Yes, she was a woman who made mistakes. Yes, she committed sin and had her downfalls. But as I've emphasized hopefully many times before, the Bible is not a story of great people doing amazing things by their own might. The Bible is the grand narrative of horrible people being saved by the grace of God to do amazing things. And that is seen no more fully than in the person of Bathsheba. Because what Bathsheba does is not for her own self, but she does it for her son. And I know for so many great mothers here this evening, your life is never from the time you had your children, from the time they've come out of your womb, your life has never been about you. It's been about your children. It's not been about your own career, your own reputation, your own might. It's been about the well-being of your children. It's not been about your own health. It's been about the health of your children. It's not been about your own success. It's been about the success of your children. It's been about them. You're following in the steps of Bathsheba, a godly woman who, yes, committed sin, but yes, was forgiven. And because of that, raises up a faithful king to serve on the throne of David. Praise be to God for the life of Bathsheba. Get your songbooks out, please. Boy, I'd love to spend the next 30 minutes talking about how Bathsheba foreshadows Mary, but I won't. I'll hold myself. Just think through this just for a second with me, though. Here you have, in both situations, a child born out of questionable circumstances who is going to be raised in might and wisdom by women who will give of their own selves for their children. And because of the sacrifice of Bathsheba, we have the Davidic line continue. And of course, from that comes Christ. Because of the selflessness of Mary, we have the very life of Jesus. Each of them model that trait of love and selflessness. The one that Solomon, for at least the first part of his life, and hopefully the very last, and Jesus for every step of his life exemplified. They learned it from their mothers. And there's so much instruction that we can learn from our mothers and take with us. But I know for so many of us, one of the most important things our mothers has ever taught us is God. And it's about God's love for us, God's grace for us, God's mercy for us. And perhaps you didn't have a mother that taught you those things. You can learn from Bathsheba. You can learn from Mary. You can learn from many other biblical women who did amazing things by God's might. But never forget your mother's instructions if you learned it. That God wants to give you His love. He wants to give you His grace. And He can save you if you'll just humble yourself in faith over to Him. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, please come while we stand and sing.